Welcome back to The Culture Catch. This is Justy Wright. You're listening to part two of my interview with actor, writer, director Ruben Santiago Hudson. Okay, so we have Domestic Disturbance, Devil's Advocate, Shaft, Blown Away. What other movies have you done, or what movie have you done where you feel like maybe your performance is approaching something you did on the stage, where you really was really immersed yourself?
It's a little independent film out now. It's called Winning Girls Through Psychic Mind Control. Winning Girls.
This is a Charlie Kaufman script.
No, it is a funny. It's a buddy film.
Right.
Myself and Bronson Pinchot.
Uh huh.
And Amy Carlson, and Chris Murney. It is really, really an entertaining piece of work. I play a guy with two personalities. One is a Latin drummer. They're a duo. They're a lounge act.
Right.
He's a piano player. I'm a drummer. And Sam Huell, we talk like this all the time, you know, I like to play drum, I like to see women, I go to the village, you know, to meet people, and I like to hang around, you know.
That's the Santiago part of his name, ladies and gentlemen.
That's Sam Huell, and then I'm this other spirit, this enlightened person, and I talk like this the whole movie. I never say anything with feeling. Everything just goes like this, and he's from another place. And I bring him in, but I flip back and forth. So I'll be talking like this. And then I say something like, what happened to me? Where I go? What happened to, who is this in my room now? Who is in my body now? You know, and then I go with that one, you know. So it's really just to see me flip. You know, it's kind of, and if you look online at the reviews, they all mention, wow, watch this guy flip.
That's flipping,
you know. So that's the best role I ever, I think, had in film. Their Eyes Are Watching God was another.
I was going to say the miniseries. Their Eyes Are Watching.
But you know, it's it. You know, I starred in with Bronson in Winning Girls, so right. I had a lot of freedom.
Right.
In Their Eyes Are Watching God, I was co-star and Hallie starred, and I think it's worthy to see. I think it's very good. Yeah. Anytime you see Halle Berry is worthy, and it was my first love scene. So.
Ooh. How do you keep your wife?
I just brought the check home, handed it to her.
She said, "Okay, you keep doing it, honey."
At those prices, baby, have fun. You know. You know,
if you could play any historical figure on stage or screen, who would it be and why?
So many, you know, because I'm just really.
Are you developing any right now?
No, not historical figures. I'm passionate about the history of my people, and I'm passionate about attacking the distorted images that have been created in film and television concerning my folks. You know, the Puerto Rican and African American
right.
community. I seem really to be attracted to Frederick Douglass.
Hmm.
I would love to maybe venture into Nat Turner.
Interesting.
Those two roles, I think, are incredibly complex, have a tremendous amount of strength, dignity, and I just think that they're complex individuals. I think it's a lot to each one of those.
Right.
I just heard a speech that Mr. Frederick Douglass had done. 4th of July, they did it on NPR the other day.
Right.
Somebody read it, and it was they called him to speak on the 4th of July, and he tore up the 4th of July.
Right.
He just talked about, it's not my 4th of July. All those things that are in the Declaration of Independence, you've been privileged to, and I haven't. So why am I speaking? Why are you calling me?
Mm.
You know? And it was like he flipped on him.
Right.
But it was so, the facts were so evident that he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, if you compare the cruelty, the harshness, the things that the United States has done to African-American people of African descent, you can compare any place in the world of things that have happened to people in their countries, and America would reign supreme in the cruelty that they issued out. And it was like, and I said, wow. You know, and...
What people don't realize, for a historical figure to say that in his day was very heavy.
A self-taught man, a former slave. You know, he taught himself
heavy.
To read and became so eloquent. So I would love to delve into him, but not only just his speeches. I want to go home with him.
All right, here's the pitch. We'd make the pitch to HBO tomorrow. I set the meeting up.
You get that done. You know, I don't know how anything gets done. I said that before. Go back on this interview. I don't know how anything gets done.
You're absolutely right.
At this point, no one really wants to hear anything I have to say, and I got this hit movie out.
Let me ask you, do you feel as an ethnic individual, it may be more difficult if you were a white actor with the same credit list? Would it be easier?
Well, you know, I think it's difficult for white people to get movies done too. I think it's difficult for Asian people to get movies done. But that's a double pronged question. Do I think I'd be further if I was a white guy? Without a doubt.
Yes.
Listen, you know, read some of the things that are said about me as an actor. You should hear some of the things actors say to me.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I have been, you know, what has taken me so long to really be well known and make it big, if I ever make it big, a lot of that is my fault. And if you put a fault on it, because I've chosen to do things my way. I have not just went and I haven't done stupid sitcoms and Buck Your Eyes and Roll, and I won't do, and I'm tired of playing cop buddies to white heroes.
Right.
And I'm tired of playing, you know, so I stopped doing them.
Well, the climate's much different, though. You, for the African American, the roles of in the last couple of years, there's been some more empowering roles.
That's for stars. They ain't taking people that just are fine actors and giving. They'll give it to Will Smith because he's the biggest star in the world. They give it to Denzel because of the critical acclaim. They give it to Sam Jackson because he's an international star. See, the business is a complicated business, and people don't.
I was thinking more like Jamie and what he's done.
Well, Jamie Foxx just won an Oscar.
I know. But look at where he came from. He came from comedy, and who would have thought he would have been able to make that transition?
See, but when they saw him do that, the
football
film.
Movie, yeah.
See, plus he had a champion, Taylor Hackford, who's a man of extraordinary integrity, who took him, he's a white man, took him 10, 15 years to get Ray done.
Yeah, that's true. Now, people don't realize that. They think it was overnight.
But you know, he saw something, white, black, otherwise, that he was passionate about. Ray Charles.
Right.
And he stayed with it. He did all these other projects, but he stayed with Ray. Then he found the perfect, ideal Ray Charles, you know, in Jamie Foxx. Now, Jamie has elevated from that comedy. He really understood, now is trying to understand the craft of acting.
Right.
He's moving as an actor into a different plateau. You know, has he jumped on stage and done Mark Antony? No.
No.
I think he'd be willing to try it, though. You know, so that's the kind of courage that you have to become a great actor or a wonderful actor.
Well, actually, that leads me into this question. What advice would you give a young or struggling actor?
Learn the craft of acting. An actor is a craftsperson. You know, it really is. I mean, like a baker. You know, somebody say, I make the best cupcakes in the world, you'd be like, yeah. But if they come and hand you that cupcake with all that chocolate on it, that nice moist center and that nice flavor on it, the balance on it is great, and it's just, you start eating and say, damn, give me a glass of milk with this. You know, this person can bake. A carpenter. You know, you learn how to make table legs all day in school, but when you put that table leg on a real table that you made, and that wood is so perfect and beautiful, they say, this guy's a carpenter. An actor is a craftsperson. Learn the craft of acting.
Get out there and act.
Act.
Yeah.
It's the only way you can learn it.
I think that a lot of that is lost in the way our society portrays celebrities. There are actors in film who never, ever get to that level of acting, because we both know how easy it is to act in a movie. A good director...
It's the editing. You know, when you got 10, give me 10 times to do something, see if I can get it right.
Right.
Oh, I have it so perfect, it'd be a damn shame. My whole thing is when I'm doing a film, I say, give me 2 takes.
Right.
Just one is technical.
We got to get you on the Larry David show, man. I think he gets 1 take, right?
You know, I love 1 take. I get home real early. I see the kids real early that night. You know, I like 2 takes and out. The first one, you got to get all the technical things together, and then I'll lay it in. After that, you just start, it gets weaker, it gets diminished, it gets... You know, you start thinking too much. You know, let the instinct, let it be organic. Right. And somebody will come back to me after about 5 or 6 takes and say, okay, now do it, make it yours. Make it mine? Whose was it the first time I did it? It's mine every time I do it.
They need that safety.
Then you start.
Because the lighting was wrong.
Then you start adding things on it, then it's not mine again. I'll make it mine. You want to go back to what's mine? Go to that first take before you start adding and embellishing it.
Right.
You know, and I know that sounds arrogant, and I know it sounds strong, but it's the truth. You know, the first take that comes out is your instinct. For me. And then you start adding. Yeah, well, why not look away on the third line? Don't look at them. And when you come in, I'll do things instinctively. Like I had a scene the other day in this film I'm doing, Brother Shadow, this independent. And I walk in and Scott Cohen, who's the star of it, is on the couch. And I come in the house looking for him. I don't come right in the house and look at him. You know, he's on the couch in the living room. I come right in and looked in the kitchen first.
Right.
Now, in my community, in African-American community, where I'm from, if you walk into my mama's, my godmother's house right now, I call my mama. She's sitting in the kitchen. Her and whatever friends she got, they're not sitting in the living room.
Right.
They're sitting in the kitchen talking, having a glass of lemonade. And when you walk in that house, if you want to find her, look in the kitchen. So my instinct is when I walked in the house looking for him, I looked in the kitchen. But it was so quick, you know, into the kitchen, then straight, oh, there he is.
Right.
I didn't come looking in the living room. And so they said, well, when you come in, why'd you look? You know he's going to be laying on the couch. You heard he was in a fight. Yeah, but that ain't my instinct.
Right.
So trust me, you know, hang with me. And okay. Like he told me, you should be meaner in this scene. And I'm like, then where am I going to go later when I really get mad?
Yeah, people want to embellish. They're getting paid to direct.
I said, I'm not mean. I'm doing my job. I'm strict. I'm stern. But I'm not mean. If I grab his face where I see a big wound on it, I'm being cruel.
Right.
I'm not cruel. If I see his face has got a wound on it and I want to look at it better, I'll take my finger and lift his chin. But if I grab that wound, that's cruelty.
Right.
That's saying something different about my character than I am. So watch me handle this. You know, and I told you.
Who's the director on this?
Good young director. Anyway, we'll leave my name.
Okay. How do you want to be remembered?
I never thought about being remembered, you know. Right now, I know people say that when they introduce me, it's always about my integrity, you know, and how I refuse to. I won't sidestep how important it is to create images of reality about who I am and representing my people. I don't want to do things to mislead the youth and make them think, you know, being a thug is the way to go. You know, if I'm a thug and I played a many thug in a movie, 9 out of 10 times they blow my head off, they lock me up. You know, I don't want to ride off in a Cadillac in the end pimping 2 young white girls.
Right.
I don't want to create that image. Now, if I'm pimping 2 young white girls, in the end of the movie, they'd be throwing me up against the car, handcuffing me, and I'd be looking over my shoulder telling somebody, call my lawyer. You know, the images I want to show are the images to say, the reality of this, if you're a bad guy, you're going to have to deal with the ramifications of being a bad guy. If you're a good guy, you know, there is a possibility, or do things right, or do things with integrity, there's a possibility that you can succeed and have a good, fun life.
And I know you surely hear. You know he took my load away, and I began to say, just a little more faith and grace is all I need.
How do you feel? How do you reach out to the youth in the African American community and empower them with your integrity?
By example. You know, I don't tell them to do anything that, you know, I don't preach anything to them that I don't do. I lead by example. Even my family, my kids, I show my son, I said, show him the man I want him to be by the way I do things. My word is bond. You know, if I say something, when I cut the deal for Devil's Advocate with Taylor Hackford, I cut it in my dressing room on a handshake. I said, I'm going to be in. He said, I want you to be in this film. I said, I'm with you. And I was with him 6-7 months and trying to get it done, get the right cast. I stayed and I was with him. I had other offers. Warren Beatty offered me the one when he played the...
Bullworth.
Yeah, but I didn't let him usurp me from Taylor.
Right.
Because I told Taylor I'm there.
Right.
You know, and that's how I try to do things. If I tell you I'm going to do something, it's going to get done. And it all starts from education, though. I always preach to the kids, you know, education. Even if you go to 12th grade, you get that education, and that doesn't mean education has to stop there. Even if you don't want to go to college, still you got to educate yourself to do something and be prolific at it. If you want to be a carpenter or a plumber, be educated. Be an educated plumber. I don't mean math educated, but the skill of plumbing.
I agree with you, you know, but our youth culture is bombarded with such negativity, you know. I mean, I've worked with hip-hop acts that were really enlightening and uplifting, and a lot of the stereotypes just seem to get sold 24/7 in television and film, and these images are so negative. How do we combat that?
But it's, you know,
I know it starts at home, and a lot of these kids don't have that that bass.
But you say hip-hop, but you got to, like, look at some of this
punk, rock,
grunge,
yeah,
rock.
Punk. You know,
they start screaming racism off the stage on either way.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, they be, like, busting up stuff, setting stuff on fire. You know, that's cool, that's hip. You know, shooting heroin, that's cool, that's hip.
No, you're absolutely
right.
How
many kids are dying? It's like, you have to have a certain respect for yourself before you can respect anybody else. You have to understand and realize your mortality, and not only your mortality, but inside you, the goodness in you, the possibilities in you to do something in a positive way, to do something that will influence, if just yourself and the people immediately around you. You don't have to be an example for everybody in the community, but when you're an entertainer, you become an example. Because people look up to you and emulate you. So you have a responsibility whether you want it or not as a role model. So when people was talking about, I'm not a role model, you are. If you're in the light and kids wearing the same sneakers you're wearing and listening to the same music you're listening to and repeating the same things, the phrases you say, you are a role model whether you chose it or not.
Right.
Because your image is out there in a big way. So you have that responsibility. I walk up on kids all the time misbehaving, and my wife tells me I have to stop it. And I approach them out of respect. No matter how rude they are, if they're on a train and they're saying things that I think they shouldn't be saying in front of women and children, and I approach them and say, brother, I'm walking to you out of respect. And they laugh at me sometimes. They say, it was a J.J. Walker from Good Times. Right. And I laugh with them and say, get your funnies off. You got jokes. I got jokes, too. We'll get to that in a minute. But listen, you know, it's women and children on this thing, and you got to respect them. First of all, respect yourself and show yourself in a bigger light than that. And definitely respect these women and these children. Anything you want to do in private? I said, if you want to holler, I need you to holler. I need you to come with me and holler. I said, I got places we can stand up and holler and protest all day long. I said, because people are getting killed for iPods and busting the head with baseball bats over in different areas of the town. You want to go holler? Let's go protest and holler over there. But to be hollering on this train and saying these things, you don't need to say. But it's something behind my eyes when they look at me, because I approach them and look at them dead in the eyes,
right,
that says I'm not a joke. And because the bottom line is that little girl whose hand I'm holding, that's my daughter, I'm willing to die for her. And that's understood, not even spoken. But they see that in my eyes. But I always start with respect, and I want to end it with respect. And I demand, I ask for it in a real humble, gentle, mature way. But underneath it all, the unspoken is, you're going to give me that respect. And it could get me in trouble one day. But at this point, God has been in my corner.
Well, you know, Ruben, you're an enlightened being, and I think to share that light, it's very profound and difficult to do. You're obviously out there doing it real in the street, in your craft, on stage, in movies, television projects, whatever future projects lay in store for you. You know, I think it's profound. I think it's wonderful. We just need to share all of that with people who maybe aren't quite as enlightened and just need that little push. So I guess you may be that beacon. Or you may be that hand to give them that little push.
Well, I think I'm one individual that's going to try to do my share, whatever the share that is. If I can reach out and pull one person up in a positive way, I've done something. And if we all can do that to at least one person, we've done something. I mean, I sat at the foot of people like Ozzie Davis and watched his integrity and listened to the way he did things. And, I've talked to Harry Belafonte and people who have been on the front lines in civil rights and human rights and these sort of things. And those people are who I look up to because they make a difference. They make a difference in this world, you know, in a positive way. And I like that, you know, I really do.
One final question. What's on the horizon? What project in your hip pocket do you really want to get out there?
Well, immediately I'm directing Gem of the Ocean at the MacArthur Theater.
No, I know that, but I mean, like, projects that are in development that aren't out there yet.
Well, I'm writing a film. It's called Billy. You know, it's by a book by Albert French, and that's what I'm pushing out. Writing that and trying to sell that, and then I'm getting run out of everybody's office so far. But I think eventually when I get
tell us the backstory, because you told me we've talked about it before.
Well, it's about a little 11-year-old boy that gets himself in a lot of trouble, and he doesn't really even understand the depth of the problems he's gotten himself into in 1937 in Mississippi, and it's the repercussions of getting himself in trouble in Mississippi in 1937, being a little black boy. And not that he's right or wrong, but what can happen in an instant and what the ramifications of that are. Also, I'm looking forward to writing a series, a pilot, to hopefully be shot in New York, and I'm talking to a lot of good people about that. I have a new play that I'm commissioned by the Public Theater to finish writing. So my writing has taken off in a big way. And as an actor, I'm continuing to look for those kind of roles that you know, continue to speak to the masses about I guess, something good about humanity. No matter how bad the person is or the play is, there's something in humanity that's worth being human and is worthy, you know.
The very empowered and real Ruben Santiago Hudson. Ruben, thanks for being on the Culture Catch. We'll look for your projects out there.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It was fun being here.
All righty. You've been listening to my interview with Ruben Santiago Hudson. I'd like to thank Frank Collin and the folks at Final Draft for sponsoring this week's episode, and to my engineer, Mr. Dave Lee. This is Dusty Wright for the Culture Catch. Keep on listening.